Welcome to the 400th episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. The guest is me. I'm going to do an Ask Me Anything episode to celebrate this landmark. In the past, I haven't really celebrated landmarks. I've just been too busy kind of going to the next one. And as soon as I see the landmark coming up, I'd be like, oh, I've already recorded episodes for this. I'll do it the next time. So here we go. 400 episodes, Ask Me Anything. Over the last couple of weeks, I've put out like Instagram boxes, LinkedIn, email, stuff like that. So if you're not following me on those three platforms, I'm on LinkedIn, Mr. Gary Fox. I'm on Instagram, obviously, Mr. Gary Fox or The Entrepreneur Experiment. And I'm on, where else did I say, the email. So go to MrGaryFox.com, subscribe to the email. I send out a free newsletter every single Saturday. All the questions are from here. I've added some names for people to include their names. For others, I haven't. So let's kick off the very first question. What was the beginning? So they're on my right-hand side, so I'm going to read them out. What was the beginning of the journey like? I would like to hear your reflection startup story from Toby. This is actually a great question. And I've got asked this a lot because 400 episodes in, people haven't listened to obviously some of the early episodes. So people don't really have a clue how this all started. This started as an experiment, hence the name, but it didn't start as an interview podcast. This started as a way of figuring out a new business. There's a real irony here because now podcasting is the business. So I wanted to do an experiment over 12 months where I'd start like multiple businesses. So I thought I'd start like maybe five businesses. Looking back, this is madness, right? Because I thought I'd have like a couple of side hustles that I get going. So at the time, I was running Hostbullers, which was my property management company. We specialized in short-term lettings, mainly in Airbnb. I'd started that back in 2015, I think. Started on my own, started with 500 quid, started managing Airbnb properties. That's a separate episode in itself, which I actually think I might do because it's pretty interesting. And I built it up to do really well. We were doing 70 properties at one stage just before COVID and two incredible staff members working with me, a load of contractors working around us to help us. And we had a part-time staff member as well. So it was kind of going perfectly. I had two incredible people working with me, Rafa and Claire, and they were essentially getting to the stage where they were so competent, they were almost running the business for me. And I was like, oh, this could be quite cool. I loved doing content and I always knew the Airbnb business would be a business for a time. I knew it needed to evolve and it would never be the business because when you're building on someone else's platform, you're always got platform risk. We saw this with TikTok this week. TikTok got shut down. If you've built your business just on TikTok, you're screwed. I always thought it would be Airbnb would be the problem. It wasn't. It was COVID. So what happened was COVID happened, but I'm going to skip backwards a little bit. So I started the podcast as an experiment where I was going to document these little side hustles that I was doing, but like literally 3-4 weeks in, I realized that that was a terrible idea for a load of different reasons. Number one, I had a full-time business to run. I didn't have time to do side hustles, which is crazy. I don't know where I thought I was going to get the time. And number two, I had, obviously, as I said, I had staff members, I had clients, I had people relying on me to see me going off starting other things would have optically looked really, really bad. And it came down to that. I started doing interviews as like filler episodes, but they turned out to be the actual thing. So that's how this all started. I was going to document my own journey. And I was fascinated by people on YouTube that were doing that. I was fascinated by podcasts. I was fascinated by entrepreneurial stories. The theme was going to be, I was going to document my own journey and have like special guests on who were going to help me. Like special guests were going to be like the people you saw in the early stages who'd like come on and help me with a different stage of the business. And that just evolved over time. And that's what all businesses do. They evolve. They start off being this thing and they end up way over here. And that's the lesson I always say to founders is like, just start because you'll end up in a completely different direction. That's where it started. It really took legs during COVID. So during COVID, my property management business literally shut down overnight. We lost like literally €500,000 in 4 weeks. So I had all this free time and I needed an outlet. So I started ramping up production on the podcast. I started doing remote interviews and obviously people had loads of time. So it's kind of like a perfect storm. People had loads of time. I had loads of time. And the podcast had developed a little bit of a name, but not too much, but enough so that people were like, oh yeah, that I've heard of this or whatever. So that happened. And then I kind of doubled down. And we were still managing the property business. We were still trying to keep it going. We were doing like emergency rentals and we were doing like people who needed to isolate, all this kind of mad stuff. But we weren't making any money. We were just doing it just to keep the lights on, to try help out our landlords. So we were gradually starting to lose a lot of money. And as COVID kind of eased and came back and eased and came back, I had to make the decision to go, right, am I going to do this again? Am I going to ramp this back up? And the answer was no. I didn't want to do it anymore. I kind of realized that A, it was always going to run its time anyway, and B, that's not the business I wanted to be in. I realized how stressful it was when I stepped away. This was a 24 hours a day business because we're essentially running what is kind of a mini hotel. Like we had, I think at the time we had 50 properties plus. You might have 300 people staying per night. So there's always issues nonstop. Now, the girls were unbelievable. I knew if my phone rang, there was a major problem. My phone inevitably rang once, twice a day with a major problem. When you have that many people coming through that many properties, you're going to have major problems all the time. It's only when I stepped away that I realized how stressful that business was. Why I love podcasting and why I didn't love the property business was from the property business, you're starting from scratch every single day. You might have 300 people coming in today, 300 people tomorrow, 300 people the next day. It's just a continual, like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill. That's kind of how I felt. Whereas with the podcast, I do it today. Like I'm doing this now on a Monday afternoon. I'm going to put this out and this can be listened to once, twice, 10 times, 100,000 times, a million times. The work's already done. And the compounding effect really kicks in. So like when I do a podcast, it just compounds and compounds and compounds. And I try to record evergreen content. So this should be relevant in 6 months' time as it is today. So people can still enjoy this in 6 months' time as it is today. That was nearly a 6 minute answer to the first question. We better move this along. Second question is an easier one. Who is your dream guest that has never been on the pod? And that's from Owen. This is super easy. And these are people I want to get this year. Patrick and John Collison. Come at me, boys. There's the shout out. I'd love to get them on the pod this year. That is one of my major goals for 2025 is try to get the Collison brothers on the podcast. So if anyone's listening in Stripe, don't know why I'm doing the phone symbol. Don't phone me. I hate getting phone calls. Send me an email. I'll send you an email. What's been the most challenging part of getting to 400 episodes? That's also from Owen. There's been like thousands of micro challenges. What's been the most challenging part? It's just staying consistent, I think. That's like anything. Like, what's the most challenging part of any business? It's staying consistent. It's not missing uploads. It's continuing to put out episodes every single week. I think the most challenging part is just to stay consistent. I've loved it, though. I think that's why I've been able to do it, but that's a question later on.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through milestone moments. Deciding to commit the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, and preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help you bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Nostra, an Irish IT company, offers world-class managed IT services, cloud solutions, IT support, and more, all tailored to meet your business needs. So whether you're streamlining operations or boosting productivity, their expert team is ready to help you. Visit nostra.ie or email info@nostra.ie to see how they can help solve your IT challenges today.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code VOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
I haven't gone through these in detail. I got someone to read through them to see was there any major prep I needed to do. I wanted to do this so I could do my podcast, so I can react naturally to the questions. So I'm not like just over prepared and give you kind of rote answers. I want to have like some kind of like natural curiosity to this. So if I'm reading the questions in a slow way, this is why. I'm interested in the underlying unit economics of the world of podcasting. How can an individual or brand make it sustainable and profitable based on your experience? It would be great to get you to break down some numbers based on different variables. It doesn't have to be your own, of course. That's from Ty Geary. And then a related question from Adam Fallon. Would love to know the revenue model behind a successful podcast. Okay, I'll start at the end and work backwards. Revenue model on a successful podcast is generally sponsorship. So at the start of my podcast, I have my three sponsors. I'll read out their read. I'll do a mid-roll read as well for the main sponsor. That is how I get paid 80% of my revenue. It's sponsorship. That's true for most podcasts. Again, I can only speak for me as in exactly my numbers and stuff. My numbers are probably 80% sponsorship, 20% all the other stuff. So the other stuff would be like people paying you to host events, people paying you to speak, people paying you to interview people for them, doing like live events, conferences, things like that. I do some teaching as well, but that's not directly related to the podcast, but it definitely helps. So that's it. Sponsorship is the main one for most podcasts. And then I'll go back to Tig's question about the unit economics. So podcasts are the easiest thing in the world to start and the hardest thing in the world to scale and grow. The unit economics, there's a stat out there where it's like 99% of people don't get past episode 20, I think. So anyone that starts, 99% of people don't get past episode 20. I'd say that's even lower, if I'm honest with you. I'd say most people don't get past episode 8 or 9. So the unit economics are interesting. You will have to put out a lot of content before you actually start to get major numbers. However, there's a caveat to this. Now that podcasts are video, you can get decent numbers quicker. When I started, it was all audio. So it was much, much slower to grow. Whereas now in 2025, number one, you have to do video. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, you have to do video. It's just how it is. But that's good because it's good and bad, right? It'll make it much more expensive to start, but it will also help you grow a lot faster. So since I started doing proper video with Ben, a videographer, and then doing short form clips, the podcast has grown exponentially, like 10x, generally. So what I would do is the unit economics in this, how can I break this down for you? One of my episodes to produce can cost up to 800 euro. So, because I've got a videographer, I've got a studio, I've got an editor, and I've got loads of fixed costs, such as like software and things like that. If you're starting out, your unit cost could be quite cheap because you could do them remote. If I was starting, I'd probably do some remote. And you can also just hire studios for the day. Unit costs and that, you can look them up online. How do you get to make it profitable? I think your niche is very important. And I'm going to talk about this later in the Q&A as well. Problem selection. That is one of the biggest things for entrepreneurs, the skills to learn. And it's the same for your podcast. I would pick something, number one, that you love, that you can do pretty easily, as in like you don't have to do loads of prep for it. And number two, ideally the niche should be lucrative. I'm in the business niche. That kind of falls into like the finance niche. That kind of falls into the personal development niche. It's very, very lucrative because my audience is very specific. So if you're looking to do a profitable podcast, my answer to you would be, number one, do something that you love. And number two, hopefully that's in a niche that's very valuable. Business and finance niche, tech, they're all very, very valuable. If your podcast topic is going to be very broad, it's like a business, right? If you're targeting tennis players, right? That's a niche topic. But you know exactly who you're targeting, and the podcast is either for you or it's not for you. I'm not a tennis player. I'm automatically not going to be your listener. But you'll get the yes or no. Yes, that's exactly for me. No, that's not for me. So I would say pick a niche that you love and pick a niche that's hopefully valuable. I hope that kind of helps. I'm just trying to look back as to how I can break down the numbers. So your costs, like your costs starting out are probably looking at like maybe cost you 100 quid to produce each episode. There's some software and stuff you need, but you can do it. If you do it super, super budget, you can do a remote podcast probably somewhere underneath 50 quid an episode. Then if you're going to hire editors and stuff, you're going into the hundreds. So you can produce your own. I edited my first 50, I think, which is good in the fact that it shows you where all your mistakes are, all your coughs and all that kind of stuff are. You're editing them out. Whereas now I tend to be a little bit smoother and I tend not to have as much editing needed. So I also have an incredible editor. I hope that helps. Podcasting as a business is an interesting model. Generally, sponsorship is your main thing. For me this year, it's to de-risk from sponsorship. So I want to launch my products and services this year, and I want to do a live event this year to try de-risk that. I love that your mind plays such an integral part for you in everything that you do. I'd love to know what daily, weekly, or monthly framework / Gary OS you use for this in a little bit more detail. That's from Adam Kerwin. That's funny that Adam said Gary OS, because that's actually what my Notion docs is called. I have a Gary operating system. That is how much of a nerd I am. I have a Notion doc, and then that is Gary OS. That's my operating system. I think of my life as systems. If you know, if you listen to the podcast or you read my email, you'll know I think in systems. I read a couple of great books a couple of years ago that kind of changed how I thought about like goals and life and mindset and planning and all that kind of stuff. And systems are how I kind of manage my life. So I've got like my brain system, my body system, my business system, life system, family, finances, health, longevity. I have systems, subsystems then within in all of them. And then in terms of the mind, how I think about my brain, what daily, weekly, or monthly frameworks. So my, I'll start daily. Daily, I do a planning session right here with my notebook. So I come into this exact desk. I sit down here. I have two screens in front of me. I generally keep them off for the first 15 minutes. I'll sit down with my notebook. At the start of every week, I'll jump onto that in a second, but start of every day, I do one thing. I write down on the top of the page, you can see it here. That's my Monday one. On the top of the page, I'll write down my three main goals for the year. And then I'll write down my three main goals for that day. And those two have to combine. Those two have to overlap. So my three main goals for the year are XYZ. And then my three main goals for the day have to contribute towards moving towards my three main goals for the year, if that makes sense. So I have to move, get those three done before I move further down. I think the problem is we set too many goals and stuff. Now today is slightly different because I've written down admin. That's for a Monday brain dump. We'll get onto that in a second. And then once I have those three done, I can move on to my admin tasks. They're all the small things you need to do, like reply to John's email about studio selection, things like that. Your three main goals are how I think about the day. Hit your first three, and then you can move on to everything else. My daily brain process, then I'll read every single day. I'll read one chapter of a book, or I'll catch one of the Sunday papers or something. I'll read for like 15 minutes minimum, ideally a half an hour if I have time, every single day. That's for my brain in terms of just like that helps me be creative. It helps me be calm, helps me think. I think to be a good thinker, you have to be a good writer. To be a good writer, you should be a good reader. That's kind of how I think about things. In terms of my brain, then on a weekly basis, I do a weekly review every single weekend. Ideally on a Sunday morning, I'll sit down with a nice cup of coffee. I'll do a review of the week. So I'll do what are my wins. So I'll do three wins, three highlights, and three lessons. So the lessons I've rebranded from losses, because I think as an entrepreneur, when you manage yourself, you can focus too much on what's gone wrong. So I try rebrand them as learnings, because I think a lot of us make the same mistake over and over, but we just keep repeating it because we haven't learned anything. So I do three wins, three highlights, three learnings. That's kind of my weekly. And then that helps me get in the mindset of like what I'm going to do the following weeks. And then the second half of that coffee session will be mapping out my week. So I'll look at my calendar then. Then I'll turn on the laptops and I'll look at my calendar for the week. I'll plan out like my training. So when my training is going to be, where my work blocks are going to be, my meetings will already be scheduled. So I've tried this new thing whereby I only try have calls after 2 p.m. kind of from like 9 or 10 to 1 is generally deep work time. I'll try do whatever actual work I have to do then. And then the second half of the day from 2 to 5 is calls, admin, email. Don't always stick to it, but I try have a rule. That's kind of a new rule I have. And that helps my brain kind of go, okay, we're in deep work mode here from 9 to 1. Sit down and do your stuff. And I also find I'm better in the morning. So that's why I put all that stuff in the morning. I think having rules, again, goes back to my systems thing. Having rules are good because it helps you have a framework for your day, for your life, how you live. If you say yes to everything, you're on someone else's timetable. If you have rules and you have like a little bit of like a system that you can answer and go, I can't do a call Monday, but I can do a call Tuesday too, Wednesday too, Thursday too. So people have, we listen to this going, ah, that's why he always says that. I just try to do them at a certain time because people are pretty flexible if you set the parameters. You set what you're going to do at your time, or other people will set that for you. That's kind of how I think about it on a weekly basis. Then monthly is just kind of a bigger version of what those two together. I'll do like a bigger monthly review. I'll go through all the stuff that I've worked on, wins, losses, learnings, and try create like a sense check of where I'm going. Am I progressing towards the year? So I'll look ahead to the year and go, right, you said you're going to do these big goals this year. Did January help you move towards those? And I also have like more fun stuff. So I also have like a personal bucket list that I work off. So I'm trying to do 12 things from the bucket list this year, and I'll review that. So it's not all like boring business stuff. I try have a real blend of like body, business, brain, family, fun, finance. So I'll try kind of keep a good balance among them all. And then the monthly sessions are a bit deeper. They're probably like 90 minutes. And I'll sit down and kind of go through everything and then like look ahead to go, what fun stuff's coming up? What do I need to book? I'm trying to find a better blend between like fun stuff to look forward to and just getting on and doing the work. This year for me is all about massive action. Just take massive action on everything. That's kind of my goal for this year. So I hope that answers it in a good way for your founder framework or for your kind of mental health framework. I hope that is helpful. Then just more so on the mental health side of things, I'll train almost every day, probably have one rest day. That for me is the cornerstone of my mental health. That's the cornerstone of my brain system, is that I train in the morning first thing. If I get that training session done in the morning first thing, I am going to more than likely have a good brain day. I'm going to have a good mental health day. I'm going to have a good mental health week. Everything is downstream of physical activity for me in my mental health. So that is something that I've learned over the years, and I've kind of, sometimes I wouldn't prioritize it because I'm like, oh, you know, you can't train today. Like you've got other stuff to do and you've got work and you've got commitments and stuff like that. Whereas now I realize if I don't train, it's not a good day for me. I don't feel good. I don't act good, and I don't turn up well for other people. So number one is, how do you turn up the best for other people? You look after yourself first. It's where the, you know, the oxygen mask comes down from the airplane first. You have to save yourself first. If you're just going through the motions as a parent, as a partner, as a business person, you're just going to be miserable for everyone else around you. Whereas if you take a bit of time, have your priorities go, these are the 2-3 things I need to do for me that day. That's not selfish. That's the opposite. That means when you're turning up for your partner or your family or your kid or your business partner or your friends, whatever, you're there. You're switched on mentally. You're not resentful. You're not like anxious. You're properly switched on. So that for me is cornerstone. So I'd love to know, out of all the episodes you've done, which has been listened to or viewed the most, from Hugh Boland. This is one of the questions I had to check. So someone flagged that for me. Michael Corcoran, ex-head of social at Ryanair. That is our most downloaded episode. I should have recorded a different answer because his ego is just going to go through the roof after this. You mentioned before that you're cautious about who you invite on the show. Can you share more insights into your selection process and how you triage potential guests? Do you have a checklist of sorts for potential candidates? Great question from Luke Manning. I am cautious, yeah, because as you get a little bit further on your journey, you know, you have to be a little bit more careful. There's more people listening. You've set expectations for people so that when they tune in, they know that they're getting, hopefully, a great chat with me. They're getting a guest who's really interesting, that's genuine, that fits my kind of profile of what I want to talk about, and that it's going to be a good chat. So that's the criteria of what I look for in terms of like, I want people who are open. I want people who are honest. I want people who are building a real business. I want people who just aren't actively looking to flog something. They're not on just to shill their latest thing. Ideally, they're not someone that's been on every single podcast, every single TV show, every single radio show. I try to find a blend of people who have a little bit of a profile, but maybe haven't told their story in a full way before. So that's exactly what I'm looking for. Most of all, I'm looking for great founders and great people. How do I select them? I generally work off referral. So I'll ask this week's guest for next week's guest. Not exactly like that, but I'll ask this week's guest for 2 recommendations for people who I should have on the show. This works in a couple of different ways. This works that they've hopefully had a good time. They now know my vibe. They know what I'm like. Hopefully they've had a good experience and they know what kind of person to recommend to me. Then it works on the other side in that they can reach out to a person that they know and go, look, I was on Gary's pod. That's social proof number 1. Tick. Then the friend is now going, oh, Luke was on the pod. must be half decent. Number two, they can hopefully give like some context as to what I'm looking for. Again, that saves me a job, kind of trying to explain everything about it. And number three, then this should be like the warm intro generally will lead to at least conversation, if not a podcast. So I'll generally ask for two or three intros or recommendations. And of those two or three, I'll usually get one. So that's kind of how I select them. And the criteria is pretty simple. Good people know good people. So it's the greatest hack ever in that great guests know other great people. So it's kind of, it was the greatest hack I ever discovered, to be honest, is to ask people for referrals. I used to be like scanning everything, trying to find people. Whereas I kind of also in the benefit now of the pod's built up quite a good name, and hopefully I have too, so that people actually want to be on now. So sometimes you get inbound requests, but I'll always then ask. The second part of Luke's question there is asking about like, how do I select them, and you know, do I have a tick list? I don't have a tick list. It's not like that. A lot of it is gut. I'll kind of like go, I know that story. I've read about them for 5 years. They're in. This goes back to what I said earlier about like, I'm just constantly studying this stuff. I love business. I love founders. I love business stories. I love knowing how businesses work. I'm just obsessed with knowing, even when I'm just in like a cafe or I meet someone and they have like a haulage business. I get chatting to them. I'm like, how does that work? How do you make money? How does this work? How does that? Not in like a nosy hole way, but more so I'm just fascinated by business models and just how it all works. And if you're not like too annoying, people generally tell you pretty much anything. So I try then find like people I'm genuinely interested in. I don't tend to bring on people whose business models are very complicated or whose business models I've no interest in, or stuff that I just know would be way beyond my depth and the listener's depth, that we'd just be lost. And to be honest, the biggest thing is the story. Do they have a good story? Are they ideally a good person? And are they willing to tell that story? Because I've had people on before and they have a good story. They're not entirely willing to tell it. They'll tell you like the nice bits, the glossy bits. And what'll happen is you'll get like the rose tinted glasses thing, whereby they'll come on, they'll tell you a little bit about the start, the glasses go on, they'll skip forward 10 years and they'll be like, oh, and then we sold for 10 million. I'm like, oh, okay, bring me back 9 years there and tell me about all that. So you'll always hear me ask this in the pod. I'll be like, oh, hold on there, bring me back now to when this happened. Bring me back like 6 or 7 years. That's how I look for guests. What's one piece of advice you heard repeatedly on the podcast do you think most entrepreneurs overlook or underestimate? That's from Siobhan Connor, good friend of mine. What piece of advice do people overestimate? Is there a problem? Are you solving a problem here, or are you building a product that you think is cool? The vast majority of first-time founders will forget to actually find out, is there a problem? That sounds silly. You're going to think I'm being reductionist here, but absolutely not. What happens is, it happened last week, a founder reached out to me and they're like, oh, look, I'm building this thing. And I'm not an expert, but I'll genuinely talk to him. Most people who reach out to me if they're building something, I'll kind of give an opinion. And again, I always caveat that opinions are worthless. Talk to people who have experience and talk to lots of people, but the only person's opinion that really matters is yours. Like, are you going to stick and build this? But what people tend to overlook every single time is that they forget to talk to enough customers. Are you willing to buy this? Are you willing to buy this for 10 euros, 500 euros, 1,000 euros and pre-sell it? Charlie from Bounce. I refer to his episode all the time because he summed what it is to be an early stage entrepreneur up perfectly. If people followed the Charlie model, we would have far more successful businesses in Ireland and the world. His model is this, the three steps: listen, sell, build. They are the three things you need to do as an early stage founder when you're figuring out, do I have a business here? Do I have something that people are going to buy? Listen to your customers, sell them your solution, build it. I guarantee you, I could say this 100 times and 99% of people will still skip the steps. They will start going to the build process. They will flip it on its head. They'll build it, then they'll try sell, and then finally they'll listen. And then they'll have to start the whole expensive process of ripping down everything they've done. That is the number one piece of advice I give to every single early stage founder. Who wants to hear something funny just between me and you? It's now the next day. So we're halfway through the pod,
but it's now the next day. So this is my 400th episode and I still have tech glitches. Just want to share that with you. Halfway through the last night's podcast, the camera shut off. So the audio one is completely finished. That's done. It's in the bag. It's getting edited right now. The video one, I've had to go back and reshoot the second half. So 400 episodes in, things still go wrong. Let's get on with the rest of the pod. From Siobhan Connor, what advice do you have when starting to invest in the stock market? What book or course should I take? Good question. I am not a financial expert. I'm just going to turn down the screen here because it's really bright. I'm not a financial expert, so I don't know. I'll tell you what I do though. I read two books that completely changed how I think about investing. I read Psychology of Money and The Art of Compounding. Both changed how I think about my life, actually, and investing. So what I've done since 2016 is I've invested the same amount every single month in stock market, crypto, and just invested the same amount every month. That's what I continue to do. I'm actually in the middle of a good experiment. So since September last year, I've invested 10 euros every single day into Bitcoin and the stock market. So let's do a little quick update while we're chatting here. It's time in the market, not timing the market. That's what I've kind of learned, and that's what I talk about all the time. I don't really pay attention to the stock market day to day. I'm not a stock expert. I'm not a financial expert. It's way beyond my pay grade. It's not something I want to spend my life trying to figure out. Anytime I have tried to time the market, I've got it wrong. During COVID, I dabbled a little bit and I tried to trade some stuff. Never worked out. So now I just think of investing the same amount every single day, every single month, and just letting it compound for the next 20, 30 years. So since September 1st, 2024, I've done this experiment where I've invested 10 euros every single day, 10 into the stock market and 10 into Bitcoin. So since September 1st, 10 euros every single day, our crypto portfolio is now up to 1,854 euro. So we have a gain of 489 euro. And then on the stock market side of things, we have invested 10 euros every single day, obviously, which gives us a grand total of 1,639 euro. That's a gain of 243. So we're up 243 and 490. So give or take, we're up 750 euro since September 1st. That's not really realistic in terms of that's not going to continue for the next 20, 30 years. But overall, I should be up if I just keep investing the same amount. So that's what I do. Do whatever you think is best. Obviously, don't invest money you can't afford to lose. If you want to learn, the only way to learn is to have skin in the game, I think. So I'd invest like a small amount that you can learn from and just worry about the art of compounding, letting it compound over time. The next question from another good friend of mine. What do you feel is the biggest missed opportunity in the journey to 399 episodes from Chris Brennan? Good question. Chris knows me well, so he knows how to ask quite a personal question. The biggest missed opportunity, it's not going hard enough. It's letting self-doubt hold me back and not going all in when I probably should have 18 months ago. I went all in probably 3 years ago now, 2.5 years ago maybe. But there's still so much scope to grow. I have probably 50% more capacity to grow, both personally and in the podcast. And I think holding myself back has been the biggest missed opportunity. So this year, 2025, I'm really pushing the boat out. I'm going to Dubai in a couple of weeks. I've been to London already. I'm going to London again Friday week. So really trying to go for it. I believe I can build the best media brand for founders in the world, doing that through storytelling. So that's my answer, is that go all in on it, Gary, talking to myself. Who is the best interviewee you've had in your own words, and why was it me? From Paul Hayes. Paul is one of the most interesting guys I've had on the podcast. Hilarious dude, but incredibly stoic and philosophical at the same time. He wraps up his wisdom in humor. So if you haven't seen the pod with Paul, go back and watch it. He's a great dude. And I hope he doesn't watch that to find out what I just said. Three questions from Laura White. These are good ones. What motivates you the most to stay consistent as you have? I love what I'm doing. Number one, that really motivates me. Number two, I really feel there's a special opportunity here. That incredibly motivates me. Number three, I love what I'm doing. So I really want to retain that freedom and retain that privilege of being able to do what I love. That's what really motivates me. It also motivates me to see it growing. Like every week, you get a lot of immediate feedback in terms of you can see the numbers, you can see the people are enjoying it or not. And that's incredibly motivating. I just love doing it. So I want to give myself the freedom to do it forever. Second question from Laura. Which podcast episode surprised you the most? Oh, this is like the inspirational episode one. I don't know.
Let me mull on that one while I answer Laura's third question. Which episode surprised you most? Have I ever turned up to a podcast recording totally unprepared? People think I prepare more than I do. And this is a double-sided answer. I am incredibly prepared, but I prepare every single day, all day. I consume business content all the time. I talk to founders every day. I network with founders. I just have founder friends. I'm obsessed with the founder game. I'm obsessed with the game of building the life you want. So it's not like when you're doing the leave-in and you cram everything in the last couple hours. That's never worked for me. And I finally learned that lesson. And I now know that preparing over a long course of time is way better. I don't really see it as preparing because like I'm just constantly learning about this stuff and constantly bringing in information about people. And I always chat to people about who should I be watching? Who's coming up? Who's on the rise? Who's got an interesting story? Who's the most interesting person you've met? So that's kind of how I do it. I prepare over a long period of time. Have I ever turned up totally unprepared? Not really, because I'm kind of doing it all the time. In the early stages, it was much more difficult because I'd have to be thinking about what I was going to ask to make sure like I didn't like lose my train of thought. Whereas now, I just know from doing my reps. I'm going to come back on the which one surprised me the most. So we'll come back to that, Laura. How do you think your mindset shifted with every episode? Or is there a specific episode number that shifted your mindset from Sinead O'Keefe? No, it hasn't been like I got to episode 100 and knew it was going to be great. Those landmarks are kind of cool. But it's been more of a continual growing process, if that makes sense. It's more that like, I used to have this mindset of the silver bullet fallacy, whereby I would think when I get here, I'll be insert whatever thing it is here, confident, fit, smart, knowledgeable, wealthy, whatever it is. I used to have that mindset of like, if I just do this for long enough, suddenly I'll wake up on like a random Tuesday and I'll just bounce out of bed and I'll have this transformation like in the movies, like in Limitless or something like that. And that's not really real life, is it? Like we all think it is sometimes, but it really isn't. It's been a gradual process over the course of the last 400 episodes that I've got hopefully better. I've got more confident. I've got more comfortable. So there hasn't been really one. There has been a couple of episodes about 18 months ago, whereas if you're a regular listener, you'll see a shift in my content towards hopefully a more balanced, holistic view on things. That's how I've evolved as a person. And that's how the podcast has evolved because I have learned so much from all the founders. I've also kind of learned what I don't want to do. And that's just have a purely business focus in my life and in my content. You'll know I talk about body, business, brain all the time. They're the three buckets that I view the content through. I also do family, finance and fun in my own personal planning. But for the podcast, I want people to see that there's more to life than just having a successful business. I think if you've got a successful business and your brain is trash and your body is trash, that's not success to me. Each to their own, no judgment. But for me, I want to put out content that reflects my values and hopefully reflects people, hopefully helps people have a little bit of a better life without sounding too kind of like woo-woo and altruistic here. I want to put out content that people can get a lot from and build a life that they want. I think after COVID, a lot of people have had that wake-up call whereby it's not just about chasing euros and dollars anymore. It's about building the life you want and the life you want to live every single day, not this delayed gratification thing of like, again, the when I disease, when I go on holidays or when I retire or blah, 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 blah. I want to build a life that I love every single day and my content hopefully reflects that. Who is the most inspirational person you've interviewed? From Donna McGee. Again, I hate giving these kind of wishy-washy answers saying they're all inspirational, but genuinely I learned something from every single one of them, even if it's like what not to do, or even if it's, I definitely don't want to do that anymore. It's helped me massively with problem selection. I used to kind of look in awe at all these different businesses. And now I kind of seen the inside of like hundreds of businesses. I see I wouldn't want to do 99% of them. So now it helps me A, to love what I do because I realize that this is a special thing that I do. I love it. So many people have businesses they really don't love. It's inspiring to know that I'm pursuing my own journey. So again, it's a difficult one. It kind of goes back to Laura's one, which one surprised you, which is the most inspirational. Like I've spoken to some of the best people in Ireland, like, and some people who are world leaders. So they all inspire me. Been very, very honest. from the very, I think of my podcast in three different buckets. I pick a rising star, I pick someone in the middle, and I pick someone who's at the end, who's made it. And I learn something from every single one of those. So there's no one that kind of I pick out and try to put on a pedestal anymore. What advice would you give to a budding podcaster to get started from Jason Kidd? And there's a related question from Gavin Kennelly, so I'll answer the two together. Any advice for someone starting a podcast? Do's and don'ts. Do it. That's my advice, is to start straight away. Podcasting is the exact same as starting a business. The longer you put it off, the harder it's going to be. Podcasts are the easiest thing in the world to start, hardest thing in the world to grow and sustain. Most people, I think the stat is, most people never get past episode 6, and then 99% of people who start never get past episode 20. So I think my podcast is every single episode is a brick in the wall. I literally visualize a giant wall. Every episode is another little brick in that wall, making my podcast better, making me more established, and making me like a concrete, excuse the pun, making me a concrete fixture in the podcast landscape and building a media business, not just a podcast. Do it is the biggest thing I would say. Don't overthink it. Things you have to do. You have to have video in 2025. You cannot start a podcast in 2025 without video. I would start small. I wouldn't like have expensive, like mad fit outs because it's unnecessary. There is a standard quality that people now demand, but there's so many different ways to do a podcast in 2025 that I would also look at, is there a quirkier way that you could do it? Do you record just straight into Instagram? Do you record straight into YouTube and do lives? I wouldn't just think of, oh, I have to just mimic whatever Gary's doing or Steve Bartlett or Joe Rogan. Like, that podcast style works. It's tried and true. But if you're starting out, you have this unique opportunity to do things a little bit differently. So I would make sure that I pick something I'm absolutely passionate about. So don't pick something you have to massively prepare for. Going back to my previous answer, I prepare for podcasts every single day, but not like sitting down, cramming my notes. I prepare just, it's part of my life. It's what I do. It's what I love. So pick something you really, really love. Pick something that's not going to be hard work. That sounds contradictory to most like BS business advice you get. Oh, you got to graft and hard work. You sure do. You got to put in the hours. Again, I'm re-recording this podcast for the second time. It's not easy to do media, podcasts, just like it's not easy to do any job. But I absolutely love this. And as a result, I will do all the hard work. So make sure you pick something you really enjoy. If it's a topic or a subject matter that you really aren't that knowledgeable about, or something you're kind of just doing because it's a trend, do not do it. Do not hop on a trend. Don't make an AI podcast because you think it's cool. Grand if you're going into that area and this is something you're going to commit to, but do something you can sustain. Think of it this way. Do not start a podcast unless you're going to be willing to do it for 1 year minimum, because that is the length of time you're going to have to put in before you're going to see any sort of material return. Podcasts are unlike social media. They do not grow explosively. It's rare. Some do, but most don't. However, in 2025, you have short form video. So leverage the hell out of short form video to grow your social accounts. Your social accounts will probably grow quicker than your podcast will, but it should rise the podcast with it. They are my do's and don'ts for starting a podcast in 2025. What are the best ways of staying grounded? Does doubt ever creep in? And when it does, how do you manage it? I had to rethink this question. So I answered this question last night, obviously. And then all night I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, you just talked about self-doubt all throughout that podcast. So to give a quick summary and not to belabor the point, I've suffered from self-doubt all my life. Lack of self-confidence has held me back probably more than anything else in my entire life. So I have no problem staying grounded. I do a podcast that's pretty popular in a tiny niche. I'm not exactly Kim Kardashian. So I have no problem staying grounded. If anything, it's the other thing. I have a problem with making sure I maintain my confidence. That has led me to stop and start things in the past in my life, which I answered last night. If you want to see how these vary, go back and listen to the audio podcast after watching this one. You'll see how I've answered them differently. Kind of the same, but I just tried to be a little bit more upbeat today. Doubt creeps in all the time. And how do I manage it? Doubt creeps in all the time. Doubt creeps into everybody. Don't believe you're different. Don't believe you're the only one suffering self-doubt. Some of the smartest people I've met, some of the most successful people I've met, are racked by self-doubt. They're literally addicts that are running away from something or running towards something. Everyone has self-doubt. I'll answer another question later in the podcast about self-doubt and self-confidence. So stick with me for that one. How I manage my doubt is activity. Momentum. You'll hear me talk about momentum a lot on the podcast. I manage my self-doubt by moving, by building, by moving forward, by having a clear plan. That's why I plan out my days, my weeks, my quarters, my years, because if I have a vacuum, doubt rushes in to fill that vacuum. If I have a clear plan, I just get on and do it. So doubt creeps in all the time. I negate that through activity, which is physical. I literally go for a run or go to the gym. After I do both those, feel pretty good. Doubt's kind of gone. Or I just literally pick five tasks that I can knock out really quickly. And that gets me through the little hump. It creeps in all the time. You got to find a way to deal with it. What's the most surprising lesson you've learned from interviewing founders, and how does it shape your own entrepreneurial mindset? I'm going to answer this here and again later. So the most surprising thing I've learned is that no one knows what they're doing. We're all figuring out as we go. That's my friends at Nostra, by the way, who are now the kind sponsors of the podcast for this season. Everyone is figuring it out. Some people are just better at faking it till they make it, or some people are just able to like compartmentalize things, because some of us kind of like let doubt, again, doubt creeping in, and you know, it kind of stops us in our tracks. Whereas the best entrepreneurs I've met are able to just keep going. They're able to just like, they know they don't know what they're doing, but they're willing to figure it out and look foolish doing it. So the biggest thing I've learned is that everyone is figuring it out. One of the biggest lessons I've learned is don't pretend you know everything. Be open, be genuine, be humble, and ask loads of questions. I literally have made a career out of it. I will ask the most ridiculous question and I get away with it because I'm a podcast host and it's my job. Genuinely, it's made me a much better person. It's made me a better communicator. It's made me a happier person, just asking questions and just not pretending I know things. I used to kind of be in conversations with people and I would almost shut down because I wouldn't want to look stupid, or I wouldn't want to let them know that I didn't know what I was talking about. I pretend I knew. That's just a recipe for disaster and unhappiness. So everyone's figuring it out. Be open, be humble, be kind, and ask people to help you. Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets, to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. From all the interviews you've done, what is the skill that's overlooked the most starting out, or that's generally made too late in startups? I'm going to talk about it again, Charlie from Bounce, his framework of listen, sell, build. Listening is the biggest thing that's overlooked at the start. People build a product or a service they think people want as opposed to the one they know people want. Now, you can never be entirely sure, but people don't want to hear no. So they will deliberately not talk to enough people. They will not get enough consumer insights. They will not ask people early enough to part with cash. That is the only true measure of whether whether your business will be successful, is that are people willing to pay you for this? And people will often spend years and they'll go raise money. They'll raise like millions and they'll hire a team and they'll do all this thing and then launch. And then people are like, what the hell is this? This is the worst product ever, because they're not willing to go back to my previous point. They're not willing to look foolish and they're not willing to hear no, so that they'll keep plowing away and they build something that nobody wants. So that is the biggest skill that people need starting out, is the ability to ask great questions and the ability to take the feedback on board. What's the greatest lesson learned after 400 episodes from Jenny Johnston, my great friend in Azure? Again, another great sponsor of the podcast and a great supporter of mine. The greatest lesson is what I've just talked about two answers ago. Everyone's figuring it out. Don't let that stop you. You don't know the answer. No one else knows the answer either. You'll get there if you start. Everyone is figuring it out as they go. The most successful people I've met on the podcast will kind of shrug their shoulders and go, sometimes I don't know how I got here. And it's lovely. And it's the people that spoof and kind of pretend to know it all are the ones to be aware of. It's the people who are like, yeah, we just kept showing up every day. The power of consistency will put you in the 20% of people who are going to make it. The ability to show up and not quit and be resilient. Above all, above like your great idea, above like the trendy tech trends, above everything, the ability to stay in the game, survive to thrive. I teach a course in Trinity to early stage entrepreneurs, and I say this to them, survive to thrive. That's what you got to do in the first 2 years, maybe longer, is just survive. You got to stay in the game. You got to stay in the game. If you stay in the game, you'll eventually get lucky enough to survive and thrive. Now, next one. What interview stands out the most out of 399 and for what reason? This is from Paul Sweetman. And then there's the second part. Given you have a view of what success looks like, both what you do yourself and the 399 people you've interviewed, what is the most common attribute displayed which has driven the success? Again, I talked about that in Jenny's answer above, resilience. Resilience and the ability to keep going against all odds. Staying in the game. That's what really matters. That's what matters above all else. The ability to stay in the game, not over leverage yourself, and the ability to be a calculated risk taker. Entrepreneurs have this myth around them that they're these crazy risk takers, that they just burn the boats and go all in. They do, but they try not to bankrupt themselves and everyone around them at the same time. The more experienced entrepreneurs I meet, they're able to weigh up the risk. What's the cost-benefit ratio of this? What's the pros and cons? What's going to be good? What's going to be bad? What's the worst-case scenario? What's the best-case scenario? And let's see if we can land somewhere in the middle and then survive long enough to get to the best-case scenario. Resilience is the number one thing. What interview stands out most from 399 and for what reason? There's absolutely tons. Like, I think back to some of my early interviews and I don't know how people even let me in the room, like Gary Lavin, who founder of Vithit, he had me on after, I had him on after like episode 16 or something. I just had him back on after episode 380 there recently. It's not the interviews that stand out, it's the kindness that people showed to me, and it's the willingness that people showed to share their journey and to be a part of mine, and the openness to help people along the way. The broader themes are like, people will generally help you if you ask. If you ask people in the right way, in a polite and a direct way, going, hey, I'd love for you to help me with this, most people will help you. There's been tons of interviews where I've had mental shifts myself in terms of realizing what I don't want to do. But there's been so many interviews along the way, I really do not like picking out individual ones. I love this question coming up, a little sip of tea. What's your favorite way to be creative? From Quiva to Frine. Dufresne. Quiva, great question. I have a few. This is probably my favorite way, is to do podcasts. I absolutely love this. This is definitely my medium. Little known fact, I used to be a professional photojournalist for nearly 6 years. Photography used to be my favorite way to be creative. I actually don't do much of it at all now, which is weird, right? It's probably some PTSD from it. It's actually not really. I just haven't given myself the time. So photography used to be my favorite way to be creative. I did for a living. So I had like front page newspapers all the time, did book covers, magazine covers, traveled all over the world, traveled throughout the Middle East doing it. It was amazing. I was at every major news event, sport event, concert for like 5 years. Loved it, but got sick of living my life through someone else's lens, if that makes sense. I would just see the world through this little like tiny 2 centimeter by 2 centimeter box. And I realized I was living someone else's life and I didn't really want to be documenting other people's life and often misery, because I would often have to cover a lot of like news events and things like that and miserable news sales. And I also realized there was an inflection point coming in terms of photography and media, that user generated content like TikTok, Instagram were coming. Everyone now had this in their pocket, which was, they were catching up with the best cameras. I used to have two cameras around my body 16 hours a day. This, like, they're both about 5 grand. And I had all these different incredible lenses.
And then I saw the iPhone and stuff come out and then get better and better and better. And I realized there's no way that photojournalists will be able to compete with user-generated content. So for those reasons, I'm out. For those reasons, I decided that I kind of wanted more from life. Writing, I think now is probably my favorite way to be creative. I really, really like writing. So I'll read for 30 minutes and then I'll write for 30 minutes. I really, really like that. From Instagram, what quote has always stuck with you? And what is the most common trait all major entrepreneurs have? That's from David McGowan. I actually have a quotes notion, so I'll pull it up right now and give you my personal quote. I don't know whether if I took this from someone or if I just created it myself. It's exactly the most unique quote in the world. But that's a choice is my favorite quote. That's a choice. Whenever someone makes a good decision, a bad decision, if they're in a rough spot, if they're making bad decisions, I always say, that's a choice. I say that to myself. I say that to my partner. I say that to my friends. They're choices. Everyone has a choice, right? Apart from, you know, when bad things happen in life, we all have choices. And sometimes we're our own worst enemy. What major, so I'll go through the traits thing as I'm pulling it up here. What major traits? I've kind of answered this question a couple of times before, so I won't labor it now. Resilience is the biggest one. They have the dog in them. I kind of talked about that already. They have the dog in them. They're unwilling to quit. That is the biggest thing. If you can build resilience. So I have loads of different quotes here. I'm trying to find what would be my favorite one. There's one of the quotes I love. It comes from Napoleon. Hesitation is fatal. Once an action has begun, it must be followed through with the utmost execution of will. I have different favorite quotes. It's like my favorite book. My favorite book depends on what I'm trying to solve at that time. My favorite book changes from time to time, and great books depend on what you're going through at the time. My favorite quotes change all the time. There's loads of them. I have a Notion doc with probably 100 quotes on my newsletter, which I send out every single Sunday. I do a quote of the week. So if you're not on my newsletter, go to mrgaryfox.com. I send out a quote of the week every single week. So I hope you're on my newsletter, Dave. What life lessons would you pass on to your 20-year-old self for body, business, and brain? So in terms of the body, it would be find things that push you way beyond your comfort zone. You have a tendency to stick in your comfort zone. You need to be pushed way out of your comfort zone. I'm speaking to myself here, my 20-year-old self. Also, knock the booze in the head. It doesn't do you any good. For the brain, figure out your own psychology. Figure out why you self-sabotage sometimes. Try to remove your lack of self-confidence by understanding your own psychology. The sooner you understand your own psychology, the sooner you'll be able to figure out the world around you. And business is a tougher one because I have a lot that I would do. I would probably say don't quit as fast as you have. Stick with things and don't let, again, self-doubt make you walk away from things. Stick with them. What qualities do you see often in younger entrepreneurs versus older? That's from Anton McDonald. Sorry, the other one's from Mark Connaughton from Class Kicks. This one's from Anton McDonald. What qualities do you see in young entrepreneurs versus older? Younger entrepreneurs have a brilliant naivety of looking at the world. The negative on that is they tend to focus on the product, not the distribution. Older entrepreneurs and more experienced entrepreneurs will focus on the distribution of the product and the actual problem they're trying to solve and how they're going to get it to the people who really need it the most. There, if I could combine both of those, you've built the ideal entrepreneur. How do you start a business when you have a family in terms of drop-offs, dinners, etc.? That's from Mahangal 2019 on Instagram. We literally did this earlier on. Well, it would have been today if I was doing this again yesterday. So yeah, every week we have a family meeting. We sit down, we run through all our calendars. Everything in our house runs through our calendars, through Google Calendar. And we also have a little Perspex board we stick on the fridge every week that has the month. And we have everything attributed to each person. So we try to find a balance between where are you this, this, and this day. To be honest, since COVID, way easier. In a pre-COVID world, I think we would have struggled massively because both of us work 5 days a week, but both of us were on the road or in offices 5 days a week, whereas now we're not. We both can work from home certain days. So we balance it off. We literally sit down every week, look out a week to 2 weeks in advance and say, okay, where are you this day, this day, this day? Literally plan it out like a business. That's the end of the AMA. Thank you so much for listening and watching. If you're watching YouTube, I've done this for you twice. So do me a favor, hit like, hit subscribe, and send this to one person. If you're listening on audio, please send this to one person you think will enjoy it. I'll see you back here next Thursday for a brand new episode.